Many years ago, I went to a small congregation as a guest preacher. And I'd requested a couple of hymns, and when I got there, there were no hymnals. And I'd requested some music, but when I got there, there was no one to play the piano. And I had requested a cassette tape to play some meditation, but the cassette didn't work. And I was desperate for music, desperate for the magic that music does in our lives, what it adds to our experience, because it is experience. So in my desperation, there were only two options. One was for me to sing and make a small congregation extinct. The other was to get everybody else to sing, but what did they know? There seemed to be two choices. Happy Birthday, which didn't fit the category for anyone, and Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a dream. So I decided that we would do that, but I gave it a religious cover. I said, you know, this song is much deeper than that stream would indicate. This song really comes out of the Hindu tradition that we have all of this work to do and we're all going to be rowing, but we should do it merrily. It's a choice of attitude. And not only that, but congruent with Hinduism, life is but a dream, appearance in the veil of Maya. I did about 5 minutes on this, and I don't know whether they bought it or not. Did they, Al? Did they, Judy? Nobody bought that at all. This was the congregation. It was downstairs. There were about 8 of you. But you sang Row, Row, Row Your Boat. You felt damned awkward about it, but you did. And it was for the magic. It was for the buzz. It was about what religion is about. It was about what life is about, and that is experience. There is that buzz of people singing together, even if we're singing in different keys, even if we're singing in different meters, even if we're sometimes singing different words. There is that still self-correcting that when you are with people, it is almost a group of 8 or 9, you can probably create dissonance and stand out like a sore thumb. But in a large group, it is almost impossible to create dissonance. There is almost always a kind of harmony and a buzz that energizes us and that is physically and emotionally moving. Merrily. I want to get back to that message, because that message, whether it was fake or, well, it wasn't fake, it was improvised, or whether it was a real fake in the sense that I was telling the truth. In that song, as in all of the songs that we've heard and our opening words from Dr. Zeus, we have had some simple truths sung and repeated to us about what it is that we believe in and what it is that we are due to give to life and what our religion really is about, which is about living. There's so much, and I talked about this a little bit last week, there's so much pessimism and negativity and anger out there in the world, in politics, in religion, all over, because this is something that human beings carry around with us. It's interesting to me that some of the great metaphors of life seem to be quite negative. I think 3 weeks ago about the cynics and the word cynic coming from the Greek word for dog. The cynics saw human life like as being a dog tied to a horse cart, and you just got dragged about by life and you didn't have any more knowledge or comprehension than a dog had. Now that is a little cynical. The other image that I always liked was the one from pharaonic Egypt. You've all seen scarabs. What is a scarab? A scarab is a dung beetle that spends its life walking backwards while accumulating a gigantic roll of what a dung beetle is named for acquiring. And it's a metaphor of absurdity. I mean, your greatest object in life is to move through life backwards, accumulating something of no worth at all, there is actually a profound religious message in that that doesn't need to be highly pessimistic, just cautionary. Be sure, you know, what is it that you're collecting here? The third, and the one that made the title of the sermon, is Sisyphus. People talk about Sisyphus as the ultimate image of absurdity. What does Sisyphus do? He rolls this rock up to the top of a mountain, and he gets there by the sweat of his brow, by the agony in his muscles, and when he gets there, the damn thing just rolls down the other side, and he has to start all over again. What a tremendous image of repetitive absurdity. But wait. What would happen if, when Sisyphus rolled the rock to the top of the hill, it stayed there? And his work would be over. His struggle would be over. The things that he was involved in doing and trying to accomplish and finding the meaning in the moments of effort would be in the past, because he would have found something at an end point. It is only in the houses of cards that we build getting knocked down. It is only in the chaos. It is only in the rock rolling back down the hill that we have something to move forward to engage, to try to find meaning in the moments of striving and of struggle, to take a moment in the glow of accomplishment before starting over again. In my view, hell is not hellfire and brimstone. Hell is being in Eden and being, if you will, God's pets in the zoo of Eden, as opposed to living by the sweat of our brow, being involved in a world that needs us, being involved with people whom we need and who need us. That's opportunity for engagement and for leading meaningful lives. All right, an important question and disclaimer, and it's personal. I love to watch TV and listen to radio preachers. I love it when they go on their kind of broken record, because each one kind of has one message, and, you know, usually it's something about somebody else's sin out there and some terrible thing that he's, you know, the definition of a Puritan was somebody with a terrible fear that somewhere there was someone else enjoying themselves. But you have preachers who go on and on against sin, sexual sin, homosexuality, and all of those things, and they are inevitably the people that get caught with their pants down somewhere, and we take great pleasure in that. But aside from whatever our own Schadenfreude might be around their downfall, it's an interesting diagnostic, not of what people are for so much as but what we struggle with. When you hear some preachers preaching about, you gotta have faith, I know it's all going to hell, but you gotta have faith, I know it doesn't look like it makes any sense, but you gotta have faith, I've come to the tentative conclusion that many of them are wrestling with their own doubts, with their own lack of faith. So if you want to know what somebody's struggling with, look at what it is that they're talking about. And so when I had this little insight, I decided to apply it to myself. Always a dangerous thing to do, because I actually had to think about what it is that I have been saying over the course of years. And what I've been saying is that despite appearances, life can have meaning. What we do, what we choose, makes a difference in that moment. Now, does this mean, kind of diagnostically, that I'm struggling with all of that existential angst because at some level I fear that life doesn't have a meaning? Absolutely yes. It is absolutely my struggle. I don't know if life has any intrinsic meaning. I don't know sub specie eternitatis, under the light of eternity. I don't know in the vastness of the universe that my life, my death, my struggle, my pain, my suffering mean anything in the universal life of the cosmos. I don't know. But I'm willing to act as if it does. I'm willing to act as if all of our issues, all of our pains and all of our joys and all of our struggles don't have to have cosmic significance that is intrinsic in order to have significance that is transactional. That is, in terms of how we are when we are with each other and how we are when we are with ourselves. I understand that the amount of energy that I expend during the course of my life, as big as my carbon footprint, even in sandals, might be, is nothing to the birth and the death of stars, to the novae and supernovae out there in the universe. But here, in the microcosm of our lives, what we do is of immense importance. And whether it is involved in creating meaning or discovering meaning, the existential position and the essential position, as long as we agree that what we do has some measure in the appreciation of the meaning that we uncover and create when we are together, that we have obligations one to another, and that we can find in our moments of engagement, of resistance, of struggle, of questioning, of helping, all of those things that connect us in ways that give life and energy back into our world and back to each other. It seems to me that one of the great kind of personal messianic fallacies is that people think that we have to do great things and solve great problems. I kind of gave up changing the entire universe some time ago, and I'm working on a smaller one. I'm kind of starting with my desk, and I hope to get to the back of my car in the chaos that's back there. I'm willing to be kind of godlike in trying to bring order out of the small chaoses in my life. But Mother Teresa, did somebody just whisper Mother Teresa? Mother Teresa said something very profound and inspirational, which is, our job is not to do great things, but to do small things with great love. And I think that that is the thing that lets the starlight within us shine. That's what gives us the opportunity to really be a light to each other of inspiration, of help, and of hope, and of healing, and all of the things that make our world, our small world, feel better for all of us here. I love the great philosophical and theological problems. They're terrific fun. The great problems of where do we come from? What is the source of existence? Who or what is God? Did God create all of this standing outside the universe, normal Western theology, or is God the universe itself, Spinoza's theology, or are we just a dream in the mind of a butterfly, or are we just, as some philosopher was writing about this week, are we just a computer simulation game on somebody's giant screen and don't know it? That's a serious philosophical question, which is why you understand that philosophy and theology have very little relationship to how we actually lead our lives. Robert Heinlein has a wonderful phrase. He said, theology has the same relationship to religion that history has to what actually happened, which is none to speak of. So I love all of those great questions. I love wrestling with them, but it's like playing cards or chess or checkers. It's recreation. What isn't recreation is the serious and the joyful and the happy opportunities that we have here. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. So much of our religions are filled with anger and hatred, with religion saying, I'm right and you're wrong, I'm going to paradise, you're going to hell, you are an apostate, you are a heretic, my God is angry at you and my loving God is going to burn you and punish you forever. And I've always had trouble with that one. And all of the seriousness, there's so much in today's world across the religious spectrum of sinners in the hands of an angry God. You're all a bunch of damned sinners and there's nothing to save you from the floodgates of hell except the hand of God. You know, and it's a fun sermon to do, but it's... and actually, if I do the whole thing, the collection is usually really good. What about the joy? What about the hallelujahs? What about the making a joyful noise? What about the fact that we share this incredible miracle? I feel like I have stumbled that existence and birth or incarnation, whatever you want to call what we are and where we are today, is like stumbling into this incredible party that I didn't put together and that I didn't throw. But my goodness, there's singing, there's dancing, there's some crying, there's some loving, there's some responsibility when you're a guest at a party to be nice to the other guests. There's some responsibility when you're a guest at a party maybe to help clean up the mess that you make, to be a good guest. And I would love to be able to thank the host, but I might not find the host during my lifetime. I might not understand who threw the party. And I don't really even have to care who threw the party if I enjoy what is in this banquet in front of me, if I participate in it ethically, if I eat and drink and am merry and I'm a good guest with others on this planet and with each other. It seems to me not to take anything from rocket science to physics to theology to understand that there is something here to appreciate, something here to sing and dance about, something that calls for the living response of both ethics, compassion, and a really good hallelujah. Because being joyful is part of what also charges our batteries, informs our souls, and gives us the strength to reach out with others to sing, to dance, to love, and to celebrate.